to Ukraine last night, EU leaders agreed to deliver a new ultimatum to Russia: reverse course in Ukraine or face a raft of new sanctions. Today, President Putin has urged talks on Ukraine, but his agenda is, quote, statehood for East Ukraine. For the West's take on this, I've been talking to James Nixey. He's head of the Russia and Eurasia Department at Chatham House, home of the Royal Institute of International Affairs. I asked him whether Putin's call to talks was a genuine response to pressure or just a stalling tactic.
I think it's neither. I think he genuinely believes it, actually. The fact of the matter is that statehood for eastern Ukraine is a non-starter as far as A, the Kiev government is concerned, and B, the international community. It would be a significant victory for Putin, of course, but I think that, I suppose, in a process of negotiations, if you start out with what you know you're going to get, then it's a reasonably clever response if you will get somewhat short of that, which he would still accept.
What possible sanctions are the EU and the US and others now thinking of, and what sanctions could they come up with that might cause Putin to think again?
Well, I think there's two parts to that question, actually. There's plenty of sanctions still to come. Plenty of sanctions are available, but I'm not sure that they'll cause him to think again. So, dissecting those two, then I think that certainly there are a number of visa bans which could still be instigated right up to and including the president himself. In other words, and there is the expulsion from more international clubs such as G8 and the WTO. There is a stripping of Russia of the World Cup. And of course, there are further economic sanctions way beyond what has been instigated already. Now, what I said about that being a two-part question is that I don't think Vladimir Putin is a man for turning. It is incredibly important for him that he is seen to win. And so ultimately, what we'll get out of this is not a Russian win, but a Russian fudge, which they'll claim victory, even though, of course, they won't get what is desired, which is effectively that Ukraine stands east of an east-west dividing line. In other words, exactly what Putin said, statehood for eastern Ukraine.
What about events on the ground? Could that influence things? The latest we're hearing, obviously, is that the people, civilians in Mariupol, the port, have been evacuating. If that key city is taken, what are the implications?
Well, the implications are more for the West than they are for Russia, actually, and indeed for Ukraine. It will harden Western resolve. The more evident, the more manifest, the more overt that Russian influence on the Ukrainian mainland, i.e. beyond Crimea, which they already hold, of course, the more obvious that is, and the more the West is forced into a tougher response. So each side is forcing the other into a corner here. And so the taking of Mariupol, if it comes to that, will indeed lead to those harder sanctions we've just been speaking about.
The Ukrainian leaders and others, indeed, are talking as if we're on the brink of a war here, of direct military conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Is that now almost inevitable? And if it happens, what could the West or NATO do, or what might they do?
Yeah, it's very important here to separate out the rhetoric from the reality, I feel. Some European leaders are suggesting that that the West is practically at war with Russia. And I think that's perhaps, in terms of a shooting war, then I think we're a very long way from that. And in fact, that is simply off the table as far as both sides are concerned, in fact. I think we are already in an interstate war between Russia and Ukraine, however, and that is serious enough as it is. It's merely a question of how far that escalates and how far into the Ukrainian mainland that goes. But certainly you're right, the president of Lithuania, and certainly Petro Poroshenko, the Ukrainian president himself, have been talking about a full-scale international war. And I think we're well beyond civil war, not least because civil war would imply a sort of moral equivalence between the two sides. So we are genuinely into a small-scale war between Russia and Ukraine as we speak, yes.
How do you assess Putin's medium-term strategy, let's say beyond Ukraine? What's his thinking towards other neighbouring states? Who's next?
Yeah, that's absolutely the question that I think a lot of governments, particularly the US government, are asking right now, in terms of if you were a president or a prime minister, you would want to be asking your analysts what's going to happen next and where. And I think the answer does come from an attempt at understanding Vladimir Putin himself. There appears to be a map in his mind, which, roughly speaking, conforms to the contours of a former Soviet Union. And that means that countries like Moldova, Kazakhstan, Georgia, all around the Russian periphery, are seen by him as a buffer zone which protects him in his point from his point of view from the West. But in doing so, of course, that means that these countries are not allowed to be the masters of their own destiny. And that's where he comes into real conflict with the West. This has actually been the problem for the last 20 years, actually. It's just it's really come to a head now.
There are wider implications, of course, for all of this. Let's suppose that military action is avoided, but the economic and political sanctions are stepped up. The isolation of Russia continues. What then would be the impact on, let's say, world politics? Russia is or should be, sees itself as a key player in, for instance, the various crises in the Middle East.
Yeah, nobody really wins from this, except for the fact that Russia does see it as a key, itself as a key player in world conflicts, but often Russia is seen by everybody else as something of a spoiler. It's a key player insofar as it supplies weapons to the Syrian regime. It's a key player insofar as it backs the governments of Venezuela and Cuba. So I think that Russia's self-declared status as a world stage player is not always to the benefit of everybody else. And perhaps with this new honesty in the Russian-Western relationship, then Russia's involvement in other conflicts around the world may be more evident for others to see through the prism of what it's doing in Ukraine. Russia tends to put its self-interest first and doesn't think much along the lines of philanthropy or altruism in its foreign policy. It's always doing ultimately what will further Russia's quest for messianic status.
And that was James Nixey. He's head of the Russia and Eurasia Department at Chatham House, the Royal Institute of International Affairs. Well, for more on this, we're joined by Dmitry Babich, journalist with Voice of Russia, the state-funded English language international broadcaster. Dmitry, President Putin's call for greater autonomy for eastern Ukraine, is this in response or in any way as a result of Europe and America saying, look, military options aren't on the table?
I think that if you look closely at what Putin said, he didn't speak about statehood for these areas. He just said that it was natural that people there tried to resist and to protect themselves when the new regime in Kiev used aviation and artillery against them. So he spoke about protecting their rights. He didn't say that there should be some kind of a new independent state. He said that negotiations between the rebels in the east and the government in Kiev are necessary. I don't see anything messianic or aggressive in that statement.
That said, if he is saying that he certainly understands their position, if he's legitimizing it in any way, is he raising their expectations, the rebels in Ukraine, as to the levels of support Russia is prepared to give them?
Well, it's quite obvious to me that Russia is not going to make this part of Ukraine a part of Russia because there is a mixed population there. There are many Russians, but there are also many Ukrainians. Economically, it's a basket case, and certainly the war is not making things there better in any way. What Russia wants is that people who oppose the new regime in Kiev there, they should not be arrested or executed, and they should not be forced to leave the country. If you look at Mr. Poroshenko's so-called peace plan, what he said was that rebels should either lay down their weapons or they can go to Russia. He promised them corridors to go to Russia. But how is that different from ethnic cleansing? If you don't agree with me, you just go to another state.
What is the domestic feeling about the level of support that Russia should be giving or the level of support that Russia is giving?
Well, the domestic feeling in Russia is, of course, we have lots of opinions, and they are all expressed in the press. Contrary to what the Western media is reporting, about 80% of the quality press in Russia is anti-Putin. If you look at the daily newspapers like Kommersant or Vedomosti, they are all against Putin's policy, and they follow the Western line that Russia should not be doing anything there. There are some people, I think a minority, who say that Russia should get more involved, that probably troops should be deployed. But again, this is a small minority. I think it's about 10 or 15% of nationalists. And the majority of the people support what they see Putin as doing. It is limited moral support for the rebels in the east without deploying the troops or without using the regular Russian army, which consists mostly of the drafted people, you know, the youngsters between 18 and 21 years of age. And the reason why I don't believe, and why the majority of Russians don't believe, that regular Russian troops are used there is because Ukraine is a huge country. It's 45 million. If you want to occupy it, then not 10 Russian soldiers would be caught, but hundreds of thousands, because you need a lot of highly motivated troops to fight the war in eastern Ukraine. The war in eastern Ukraine is very cruel. More than 2,000 people already died. So you need highly motivated soldiers to fight the war there. Mercenaries or youngsters drafted, you know, from school just yesterday, they can't be such motivated fighters. So my understanding is that there are locals fighting there with some Russian volunteers who had the experience of fighting in Chechnya or Afghanistan. But these volunteers then went there themselves. They were not dispatched as regular Russian government forces.
Okay, Dmitry Babich, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.